Welcome to the Answers for Elders radio show. Meet the trusted experts who will give you straight answers and will help guide you on the path of later life care. Now, here's your host, founder, caregiver, and CEO, Suzanne Newman.
And welcome, everyone, to Answers for Elders Radio Network, heard across the USA and on your favorite podcast channel. And this summer, we have been outlining the 8 foundational principles of wellness. And we started in July, and we have gone through the 8 foundational principles. And for those of you that may be just joining us, you can get all that information on our website or go to YouTube, to our YouTube channel. And today we are outlining the final principle of wellness, which has to do with financial wellness. And for a lot of us, that may mean if you're in a situation where investing is important for the future, for long-term care, that's one thing. But even if you don't have a lot of assets, it's very important that there are documentations and different types of resources that you can tap in so that you can prepare as you're aging. And we are very lucky today to have our guest, Mr. Stephen Waltar, the Chief of Legacy Estate Planning in Bellevue, Washington. And Steve, welcome back to Answers for Elders. We're so glad that you're with us today.
Thank you, Suzanne. Good to be here again.
We're glad you're here. I know you've done the radio show a while ago, and one of the things that we got a lot of feedback on is you represent something that probably a lot of us should be doing, even in our 60s, in our 50s, and we may be putting things off, may think, oh, it's not a big deal. And then what happens is something dramatic happens in our lives, and we're not prepared for it. And so it's very important, if you're listening to this program, you may be in a situation where you think you don't need certain documentation. You may not really necessarily know how to invest for the future, different things like that. So Steve, you and I are going to talk a little bit today about financial wellness. And I'm just curious on your end, how would you define financial wellness?
Wow, big broad topic. So, you know, I'm an estate planning attorney. So I think you need to be well means you need to have your documents, you know, in place.
Right.
You know, it's very different when you're young, you may need a will to list guardians, and then older, you need, you know, trust to do tax planning. And then sometimes you need to start giving things away to plan as an elder. But you need really clear financial powers, healthcare powers. You got to have that stuff lined up, because if you fail to plan, then the state will take over, and it might not even be your loved one that is making, you know, care decisions for
right.
you.
Right. And, you know, the thing that is very interesting is that I have seen time and time again when a family, you know, old elder family member chooses not to do the planning. And the more and more they put it off, what ends up happening inevitably is they do become a ward of the state. And, you know, you will need in your life at some point in your life, most likely, someone that will be your advocate and be that person that represents you, or be that individual, you know, assign certain documentation. And it's really about, once you pass away, how is your legacy being honored and your wishes being followed through on? And those are things, obviously, that a lot of us may not want to deal with because we don't want to think about those things. And are you finding, Steve, a lot, let's just say someone in their 50s, what would you say average, how many people really have that documentation, you know, in their middle age taken care of?
Yeah, I mean, people don't plan to fail. They fail to plan.
Right.
And statistically, it's somewhere between 70 to 80% of people who die without a will. And a will is kind of a starting point, right? A will may be really important, but it may not be that important. It may be powers of attorney are way more important, and management and incapacity. So I don't know. I mean, people in their 50s think they're immortal, right? Still, or they just procrastinate.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you said a will is a starting point. And obviously that's an important piece. What kind of things go into a will?
So a will doesn't cause probate. A will controls who gets what, when, and how during probate. So a will is good as a safety net, or if you have probatable properties to say who gets what, when, and how. Maybe you want one child to have a right of first refusal on your house. Well, a will is a good place to do that. But a will doesn't generally control an IRA or a 401k or even a brokerage account. You can have transfer on death designations. So I usually, as an estate planner, I start with like, who's the beneficiary? What do they need? If they're responsible, you might be able just to have transfer on death documents. On the other hand, you may have a large estate or real property in more than one state, and a trust might be a way better tool than a will. And then you can avoid court in multiple states, and then you can also give some asset protection or divorce protection to your heirs.
And you know, that's interesting too, because I know you have told me that trusts are also private. They're not public. And that's an important thing as well, I'm sure. Is that correct?
Yeah, for a lot of people, that's huge because you can go to the courthouse and you don't even have to go now. You can online Google search, essentially. You can search famous estates for one, but you can go to the various courts and log in and you can see wills, see who the beneficiaries are. Sometimes there's inventories that are there and you can see the assets. I think it was in Washington State here where Jerry Garcia died and he had property that went to one of his sons and someone could look at the will and then they could go to Google Earth and they could zoom in and see, what was there. You can avoid that with the trust because it's private. Bing Crosby died with the trust and no one knows who, got his stuff. And we could go on, Frank Sinatra, many people.
So there's also such a thing as a power of attorney document that people should have. What is the power of attorney and how does it work?
Yeah, so powers of attorney are probably needed by just about everyone. Once my kids turned 18, they were off in college and like that's what they need. They don't need wills. A power of attorney is like an agency document. It doesn't limit what you can do, but it says, oh, my agent can do certain things on my behalf. And the financial or the property powers buy, sell, lease, transfer to do banking, to pay bills. And then frequently, most states have like a separate set of statutes to deal with the health care power. And they're kind of different people, right? Who's organized, who can handle the things, who's not going to be shocked by your assets. But then it might be a totally different person that you would know your wishes for health care and interview the doctor and the nurses and make those kind of decisions.
And when you look at the whole piece of it, obviously a power of attorney, like you said, mentioned there's healthcare and there's financial. Those are all, they can be the same person or they can be different people. Is
Right.
that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind if it's like if you have two kids and you want them to be co-agents on a financial power, that could be fine. Maybe they balance each other. Maybe you want a trust company along with an individual or something. For finances, usually you don't have to make a split second decision. With health, I don't like co-agents. I kind of prefer a pecking order because the last thing you want is two people arguing about what to do or you can't make a decision. When you're under the knife, there's surgery. You kind of need someone to make those choices.
And obviously that's a whole other piece of your final wishes of resuscitation orders, different things like that. And I know that in this state, as if someone has a chronic illness or anything like that, there's a pulsed form that is created by a doctor. I'm sure there's a different type of document in every single state. What is a pulsed form in the state of Washington?
Yeah, so a physician's order on life-sustaining treatment. It was started in Oregon and now it's in a number of states, but it kind of replaced the do not resuscitate sort of pink slip that you'd have at like the fire department. A pulse is something that you talk about what to do if various things happen in life. And you usually only do it when you're like already you have a terminal disease or you're not a long window of time. And do you even want to be resuscitated if you pass out, if you have a heart attack? Many people do not want that. Do you want when it's completed by you or you and your healthcare agent and is signed by a physician and is now an order? So it is actually something that the doctors say is to happen. So it's not like you delegating to some agent, it's you saying what should happen, and it's supposed to be noticeable. Like it's
Right.
posted on your refrigerator, or if in your
Perfect.
retirement community, they have a spot where they're all held. The attorneys, we like to have a copy, but the original's supposed to be there because if the ER people come, they're supposed to see what it says,
Right.
do what it says, and it travels with you to the hospital, et cetera.
Perfect. And Steve, you and I are going to be right back after this. In the meantime, everyone, you can reach Steve in Bellevue, Washington at www.waltar.com. And we'll be right back right after this. Answers for Elders thanks you for watching The Vitality Revolution. Discover a blueprint to find a whole new gear in life, new awareness, and greater potential. Subscribe and be a part of our community. Answers for Elders is the North Star of navigating senior care, featuring content to help later life go a lot easier.